Okay, so we're here on Daf Yud Amud Beis, and in the story of the Shunamit, she's the one who recognizes Elisha as an Ish Kadosh, and she notifies her husband that we have to build him an Aliyas Kir. We discuss what Aliyas Kir is, and then the Gemara says that on the Pasuk Vatomer El Isha, Hine no Yadati ki Isha Elokim Kadosh Hu. So the Gemara says that there are two opinions. How did she recognize his greatness? How does she know that he's an Ish Kadosh? And also the Pasuk Hine no Yadati sounds like right now, like something occurred to her that she figured it out. And the Gemara quotes two opinions. Chana Amar Shalo Rasa Zvuv Over Al Shalchano, a fly didn't cross his table. Chana Amar Sadin Shal Pishtan Itzial Mitaso V'lo Rasa Keri Olav. I guess she would clean the sheets from time to time, but that's how great her hosting was, and she noticed that he never had Keri, and therefore he must be Kadosh. And the end of the Pasuk says Kadosh Hu. And the Gemara says, Kadosh Hu, Amar Rabbi Yosef Rav Chanina, Hu Kadosh, Umishar So Eino Kadosh. That's Gechazi. So let's take a look at Rav Kook on page 60 here, and it's number Kuf Mem Ches. Kemach. And he quotes this Gemara that we just saw in the name of Rav and Shmuel, and the different opinions, how she realized that he was Kadosh. So let me give a little bit of background, if I can, to this piece in Rav Kook. How does a person achieve genuine sanctity? You know, Kedusha is obviously a lofty ideal. And Rav Kook claims that there are two levels. The first level is where you're battling against the Yetzer Hara, the forces that want to pull you and allure you towards physical sensual pleasures. And you are able to overcome that. How do you do that? Mafilim et haseichel. You know, you put a lot of active emphasis and activate the intellect, such that you're focused on the intellect, which is the worlds of spirituality, as opposed to the lower worlds of physical pleasure. But at that level, you still have to really move and emphasize and activate the seichel. At some point, bingo, I don't know when it happens, but all of a sudden, you can achieve a higher level of Kedusha, where even the body itself is not battling against you, it's totally subdued and not focused on the world of pleasure and physicality, but on the world of spirituality. And Rav Kook is going to say that this whole machlokas about whether it's a zvuv that she didn't see a zvuv on his table, whether or not she didn't have keri, these relate or symbolically reflect the different levels of kedusha of ish kadosh hu. So let's go through it inside. He says, "Kedusha inyana lehisrome me'al l'tavos hamurgoshos." The goal and the definition of sanctity is to rise above all these sensuous physical pleasures, be ofen shlo yifalu al ha'adam klal. In other words, in our system of priorities, they shouldn't rate that. You know, this the involvement in physicality is not even a goal or a priority. It's completely outside of his radar screen. It doesn't have any impact on him. The afbi also osukben, even if he at this moment is involved in a physical pleasure. He's eating, he's sleeping, whatever he's doing. Lo yamshichu levavo, lo yamshichu, these physical pleasures will not pull him, his heart, klal, lios notach rehem, such that he is inclined towards them and he's focused towards them and they drag him along with him. No. Even when he's involved in eating and drinking, his mind is in total control, and his physical pleasures are secondary. They don't even cause him any sort of distraction from his, you know, divine intellectual involvements. Zosi HaKedusha B'muvana HaEchad. That's one way of understanding Kedusha. Shehi Hit'alut Tiv'it, which means you go above your nature, because Lefi nature, Lefi HaTev, a person when he's involved in physical sensual pleasures, who Nimshach Achrei Barov HaMa'at, certainly to some extent he gets orangutan, you know, he gets involved and obsessed with, focused on his pleasures. But nevertheless, at this point, because of his kedusha, his emphasis on sanctity, he rises above that teva that tends to allure him into a focus on this physical material world and pleasure, its pleasures. Umishakvar higil amala rama, but let's say he's already achieved this high level. Shesichlo shalit olav tamid. And his seichel, which means his spiritual and intellectual involvements, is always in control. Gam b'eisus soris hargoshes, even when his physical pleasures are aroused. Hu kadosh b'emes. You can't deny that he's a kadosh. But v'yesh od milo, but there's a second level beyond, that supersedes beyond this level of kedusha. Sha'adam im kvar hafach tivo l'tov kulo. He is able to actually transform his entire nature to tov. Az ein tzarkol kach l'shmiras sichlit. He doesn't have to work overtime to activate his seichel, because etzem chumro, this is where I would underline, etzem chumro, even his physicality, is nimshach el atov me'elov. It gravitates towards the good in and of itself. The goof itself becomes a conduit towards tov, v'lo yigiruhu ra, and it won't cause him to go down. The body itself is now part of the process of kedusha. I would say that I think on the second level, the kedusha penetrates through and through. It completely saturates even his physical body, which is an amazing kind of concept. And he says v'elohim shnei hanyanim, and these two levels of kedusha really are symbolized or parallel to the two different opinions about what the Shunamis saw. What did she observe? Oh, the first opinion was that she didn't see a fly travel over his table. You know, sometimes for a minute or two you won't see a fly, but this was constant. You know, whenever Elisha was eating, there were no flies around. I remember when I was a Rebbe in Malei Adumim, in the Hesder Yeshiva, so I volunteered to spend Shavuos with the guys on base. Now, Shavuos time, it gets pretty hot. And in that area, Malei Adumim, it gets very, very hot. There's a base right near the Yeshiva. I think it's called Yishai, if I'm not mistaken. Anyway, that's where they were. And I remember the amount of flies. It was unbelievable. I remember I was sitting next to a chayal in the Beit HaKnesset, and he put his sweater down. And literally, you couldn't even take a breath. There must have been 50 flies on his sweater that just landed on them. At the end, the food got so spoiled from the flies that we almost fasted. It was a 3-day yontif, you know, and it was terrible. It was awful. I remember I got back to yeshiva, I broke down crying. I said, Hashem, why do you have to treat our little boys like that? You know, that they have to go through. They weren't so. They took it in stride. You know, these are guys. I was sensitive to it. You know? Anyway, so he says the following. He says, Mora shegam bi'esach hiloso. What is the symbolic message that there was no fly on his table? That even when he was eating, lo pala al nafsho hargosha sachila gufnis, lios nifrad me'asecheloki, even while he was involved in eating, and she probably served him some pretty good food. She was a good cook, this Shunamis, right? Nevertheless, the achil itself did not have any impact on his nefesh to cut the umbilical cord, the connection between himself, his soul, and his seichel aluki, his involvement in the divine intellect. Obviously he had to activate his intellect a little bit more than normal, right? Let's say, for example, you know, they talk about, I don't know if you've ever heard this phrase, a car has, what is it, 6 cylinders, 8 cylinders. So they say most of us function with about 4 cylinders. You know, there are so many parts of our brain that we don't even use. So if you want to get to this point of Kedusha, level one of Kedusha, you have to activate your intellect a little bit more. You know, maybe use all 8 cylinders. And then he says, V'yetzahar domel zvuv. He has a Gemara later on in Masechta Brachas that the Yetzahar is compared to the zvuv. Why is the Yetzahar compared to a zvuv of all creatures on the face of the earth? Why this fly? Ki hargashos hachushios misoros b'ma'at giri. The involvement in physical sensual pleasures arouse a person with a little bit of giri. You know, you don't, the Yetzer doesn't have to work overtime here. Kizvuv shal yidei tnuah kala samuch lo hu memayer lo uf elalo samala. If anything comes near the zvuv, immediately flies very high up in the air. They say Israeli flies are different than Chutzlaritz flies. I don't know. They take their time. You know, they have more chutzpah. But classically, the fly, you know, I mean, you go even near the fly, and that's why it's so hard to catch flies, right? He says that the Yetzahara is able to move a person with ma'at giru. He doesn't have to work hard to entice him and induce him. As soon as he gets close to him, any involvement in physical pleasures, already the Yetzahara, he moves him away from the Sechel Elokei that we spoke about it. And therefore, she did not see a zvuv anywhere on his table, because even when he was involved in physicality, he was so single-mindedly focused on the Seichel Elokei that the zvuv, the Yetzahara of Taivas Achil, of getting involved in eating, would not have any impact on him. It was so simple for him to use his Seichel, focus on the Ruchnius, on the spirituality, and completely disconnect himself from the Taivas and Argoshes Achushis. Oh, the Chadomer, but there's a second opinion in Agamara. And that is that there was no carry. Which means even when he was asleep at night, he did not in any way contaminate himself or pollute himself. He was pure. Ki kolzman shaseichel sholit ba'adam bioso neir. When a person's awake and his seichel, his intellect is active, oh, the ain mo fate chotech al kedusha. You know, we still don't know the ofen chotech. You know, we can't seal and sign. You know, he's all the way up there on the highest levels of kedusha. Because what happens when he goes to sleep and his seichel is no longer active? Right, he's dormant. Da'ainu ashlamayel yonash al hepuch kol tivo l'tov. Has he achieved this level where his entire teva, all the physicality and his nature, have converted, transformed themselves to good? But Meshaina Chushiyut shall let it so that the physical sensuous involvements will not have any control over him, even when his seichel is inactive, because he's transformed his whole goof. The Eishlomer said, "Tokef aseichel hushem is gaber olav." You could always argue that even though there's no zvuv around, but that's because his seichel is so powerful, and he successfully activated it, he's able to trump the Yetzirah. But nevertheless, he's really not yet good. You know, his goof is not schlepped along. He's still fighting this battle, just that his seichel is on such a high level, intense, that he reaches the level of Kedusha. Avla b'china ha-na'osa. But if you ask me, what is the profound, then what is the most... the highest level or dimension of kedusha, he gedulas hanefesh. Gedulas hanefesh means forget about the seichel, the nefesh, which is the vital life force of his body. Gam b'yesis gabrus hachumius beis hashina. We know that the Yetzirah works overtime at night. Lo yod hara. Nevertheless, his nefesh knows no evil. Shezei yovol yodom is gabru. When can a person achieve such a thing that even at night he has no, he's not tripped up by or impacted by the Yetzirah? That's only bisgabro lizake tivo agufni kulo. That's only when he's able to convert and transform his very teva, his physicality, to a spiritual goodness. Achein tzarech sa'ad. Now he no longer needs the help of the seichel litomcho to hold him and sustain him. V'gam bios bi. And even when the help that he normally gets during the waking hours from his seichel is not with him, nevertheless, he still remains sanctified. And that's the higher level, which is symbolically reflected in the fact that he had no carry at night. And maybe we could add a few points here. Number one, it occurs to me that carry at night is not something that man can control. We're not really guilty. for keri at night. I mean, sometimes keri is a result of having bad thoughts during the day, but that's not always necessarily the case. But I think when a person is on this level of kedusha, duch and duch, you know, through and through, and Elisha achieves this level where his whole body is converted to tov, then even a keri which normally he wouldn't even be responsible for, he's not going to experience, because his whole body is a body of kedusha. That's one thought that occurs to me. Another thought that occurs to me is that according to Rav Kook, maybe these two opinions are not really at loggerheads. It's not what you'd call in a classical sense of machlokas between Rav and Shmuel or two different Amoraim. But each Amora is talking about a different dimension or a different level of Kedusha. And ultimately, the Shunamis, was so observant, you know, she had such a keen insight, that she was able to see both levels of Kedusha and Elisha. During the day when he was eating, there were no flies around. And at night, when she was ready to throw the wash into the laundry, there was no carry. She saw the highest levels of Kedusha in Elisha. It's interesting that this piece of Rav Kook, I think, should be connected to an earlier piece of Rav Kook that we learned together. Oh, about intuition, and also about Kriyat Shema Shel Alamita, because the Gemara back in the beginning of the parak quotes a pasuk Imu Alavavcha Mashkavchem Dom Sela, that when a person goes on to his mishkav at night, he needs that powerful, you know, strength of Kriyat Shema. And Rav Kook there develops the idea that Bishleim, during his daylight hours, you know, his intellectual faculties are at full prowess, the Yetzirah can't get the best of him. But when he goes at night, and now his Yetzirah can get the best of him because his intellectual powers and faculties are dormant, they're completely inactive, the Yetzirah now has almost the free reign. So we need the extra power of Kriyat Shema when he goes to sleep al Amita to protect him at night. That also should be added. Perhaps we could say also that this is Rav Kook Lishitoso, because Rav Kook, I think, sees the body ultimately as something that can be sanctified, completely sanctified. I mean, in and of itself sanctified. It's like the Ramban Shita, that every physical part of the existence of man could become holy. And he goes on a tirade against the Rambam, because the Rambam says that there's no word in Lashon Kodesh for intercourse between a husband and wife. And the Ramban says, what's he talking about? You know, there's Mishkal, and there's, you know, there are words for that, because it's also Kodesh. That's, he writes the Holy Geras HaKodesh about that. And the Ramban Shita is that after death, there'll be Tchias HaMesim, and the Guf is going to live for all eternity. See, the Rambam can't tolerate that, because the Rambam's view of the Guf is, in a sense, physicality. So how could a physical body live forever? But the Ramban is going to argue that Adam HaRishon, you know, before the Chet, had a type of a Guf that was almost spiritual, you could say, and it could live forever for all eternity. I think the Ramban's view is very close to this, that the ultimate level of Kedusha is where the body almost works on its own, you know. I think I mentioned the story once. My father came over to Rav Soloveitchik after a shiur once. My father loved the shiur so much. He said, Rebbe, I come to your shiur on a regular basis, every Tuesday night, where the Rav used to give a shiur Moriah, and I don't know if I'm going to get any schar for it. So the Rav turned like white. He said, Rabbi Berzlin, how can you say such a thing? So my father said, because when I come to Yeshiva, my body has physical pleasure from the Shia. Yeah. So the Rav said to him, Das heis Torah Lishma. That, you're on the level of Torah Lishma when your body loves Torah, you know. I think there's an etziv that I found once in his Hamak Dover, where he writes that the hanav of learning, the tainug of Torah, is not just an intellectual, it's even the guf has tainug. The physical body has pleasure from learning, you know. I don't know how scientifically if we can justify that. I don't know. But... yeah. Oh. So you remember that she says, Kadosh Hu. And the... right. So the L'chora, that's an extra word, because it could have said, Hinei Yodati Ki Ish Elokim Kadosh. Why Kadosh Hu? So the Gemara says that's a mute. Hu Kadosh. U'mishar So Eino Kadosh. That's Gechaz. He's not such a holy guy. Shenemar, because in the pasuk it says a little bit later on in the same parak that when her baby dies, she comes and she throws herself at the feet of Elisha, and Gehazi comes to take her away. So it says, Vayigash Gehazi Lahadfa. He literally, like, physically pushed her away. Om Rab Yosi Rab Chania Sha'achza Behod Yafya. Which, if you take a look at the Mefarshim, Sha'achza Behod Yafya, which, just give me a second here. I'm on the wrong page. So it says here, Bidadeha. That's what it says here. And he's quoting, I think he's quoting a whole bunch of Rishonim that say that's what it means. Yeah. So obviously this is not acceptable behavior. And the amazing thing is that he does this in the presence of Elisha. Like, what is the man thinking?
It's maybe the contradiction between the two. But Elisha, even though he's asleep, he's kadosh.
Right.
His mind is in kedusha. His body is in kedusha. Where here, it's the analogy that I was thinking of is sometimes you see goyim when they get drunk. Then they really tell you what they think about the Jews.
Right. They spill the beans.
So, but because that's their essence. You know, they put like a mask on top.
Right. Once you really remove the mask, then you get the truth comes out.
Not with all, obviously, but sometimes.
Right.
That's the situation. And he was contrary, so you see these.
Right, the contrast between the two personalities, the high and the low. So if Cook says here in Shin Mem Tes, Kol Zman Shelo Nis'atzeim Ha'odom B'Shleimus, a person on his way up to perfect himself, if he's at that level where he's not strong, right, he's on the way up maybe, but he's not strong, then Hu Olis Pael Mikol Dover Pachos, Hanasim Shchenuso. He can be drawn down, he can be dragged down by any low thing that's within his proximity, in his Dalet Amos. And now he quotes the Rambam in Hilchos Deis. The Rambam dedicates a large chunk on Arichas Dvarim at the beginning of Perek Vav in Hilchos Deis to the impact of society on a person. That's where the Rambam is very famous. He says that if you can't find a society that's moral, then go out and live in the desert. V'chevras ish mishacha, from Lashon Hashchasa, tuchal aziko. You know, a person is, if he's not sholem, then he's vulnerable to all the detrimental and influences that could drag him down the Mayit Shleimu. So he goes down, down, down. But the Pasuk here wants to speak about Elisha in the highest of terms. Avol Mailas Elisha, he's a Nelav and his Gava. He's achieved such a high level of Kedushat Shelo Hirgish Me'uma Mipchisus Gechazi. You know, even though Gehazi was his sidekick, you know, in Hasidic circles they call it the Heusbach, what?
Motzi
v'meivi, and yet, despite all that association with such a low scoundrel, nevertheless, lo hirgish mu'ma, he wasn't impacted by it. That's the highest level of sanctity. Ad means, I guess there was a point when it was, when Gehazi, right, in the story of Naaman, that's when he crossed all, you know, he passed all the boundaries. He said, "Adzman shenosan Hashem michshol lefanov legalos klono ularchiko meoso tzadik b'maisa Naaman." Later on, in the Maisa of Naaman, that's when Hashem put such a michshol in front of Gehazi. Gehazi couldn't overcome the temptation. Right, let's just quickly review the story there, right? Naaman was the Sar Tzava of Ashur, right? And he contracted leprosy, and he went to all the doctors, and nobody could help him. So the Melech Ashur contacted the king of Israel because he had heard that the Navi was an Ish Elokim. Maybe he would know how to cure Naaman. Of course, the king got all nervous. He thought maybe this was a ploy to bring the people into battle. But in any event, the appointment, the arrangement was made, and the meeting was had it, and Elisha told Naaman to dip into the Yarden 7 times, and sure enough, Naaman was completely cured. And he even started praising the Sheh Hashem El Kei Yisrael. I mean, some say, I think in Chazal, that he converted to Judaism. And then Naaman wanted to send gifts to the Navi, you know, to express his gratitude. Of course, the Navi felt that accepting gifts would lower the Kiddush Hashem here. Oh, the Navi's interested in monetary gifts, you know.
Baba.
Right. They say that when you go to a Hasidic Rebbe and ask for a brach and you give money, the money goes to tzedakah. The Rebbe doesn't pocket it for himself. That's if you, on an ideal level, I don't know, but hopefully that's what happens. Yeah. What they call a pigeon, you know, you give a pigeon. So at that point in the life of Gehazi, he went so low that he ran after Naaman and said, no, bring me the gifts, you know. And he almost completely undermined the Kiddush Hashem element. And I think Chazal said at that point he lost his Chelek Olam Haba, and that was it. He was out. So at some point Hashem does step in and say, you know, we got to get this guy out of here because he's so v'hi ashkofa niflal otzem malas kedushas Elisha. This reflects so beautifully on the marvelous level and the power and the profundity of the kedusha, the level, the sanctity of Elisha and his shleimut. She'im haya efshal lagia ezen miut mailolo v'skarvus yoso roshelov hayivadei margish b'dom marchiko. Wow. His level of Kedusha was such, he was so sensitive, that he could immediately know if there was any impact or any fluctuation in the downward move, motion, by virtue of his closeness to that Russia by the name of Gehazi. You know, it's like you and I, let's say we're very sensitive to our physical fluctuations. If I didn't eat breakfast today, I'll immediately, you know, feel hungry. Or if I have a sniffle, I know I have a cold or whatever pains I have. So immediately I'm sensitive. On a spiritual level, Elisha was so kadosh that he was sensitive that he would certainly know if somehow his association with Gehazi was having a negative impact on him, dragging him down. He would immediately realize this, and he would have to separate himself from Gehazi, which is, that's the story a little bit of Avram and Lot. You know, he parried Nomi Olai. Avram was so sensitive. Hayavadi Margish Bedover Machiko. You know, he would immediately sense, it's like you sense something on your skin. He would sense on his heart that this Gehazi, this scoundrel, this low, immoral, base guy is bringing me down. Elisha would have certainly been margishing. Avol Romus Maloso Hishigarma, he was on such an incredible level. Shalohaya Efshal Lagia Shum Miud Aru Kedushalo Mizeh. Elisha was on such a level that there was no, he was not soiled by his association with this scoundrel, this Gehazi. His Kedusha, the light of his Kedusha was still as intense as ever. So that's not for you and me. You know, we have to realize that in our life, that's what the Rambam dedicates the 6th parak of Yesodei Torah, of Hilchos Deos, excuse me, to the fact that we have to be very careful who we associate with, because that's going to drag us down if we associate with the wrong people. Elisha is the exception to the rule. His Kedusha is on such a level that Gehazi can't make an impact on him, at least that stage. Hashem felt that once Gehazi passed all the bounds and he's already doing something that's antithetical to the very Kiddush Hashem of Elisha, then we got to get rid of this guy. But at this point, Elisha was not impacted, was not soiled or contaminated by his association with Gehazi, and therefore Gehazi could be allowed to stick around. Hopefully he'll do tshuva at some point. But he was on a very low level. I remember the story they tell of a father of a young teenage girl, and he saw that she was associating with the wrong chevra, and she changed the way she dressed, and I don't know what she did with her hair, you know, all sorts of things. So he called her in one night, and they sat together watching the fireplace, the ach, you know, and when the fire went down, he told his daughter to go over and take one of the pieces of charcoal and remove it from the fireplace. So first she was very hesitant to do so because it was still hot, but when it cooled off, she did so. And he said, "Well, put it back in the fireplace." And she realized her hand was all filthy from the. So the message was that he was trying to convey to her, obviously, was that the nivshal is that sometimes you take into your hand something that's soiled, and inadvertently, whether you like it or not, it's going to have an impact. But the chiddush here is ish kadosh who kadosh velo masharso, that even though his masharso was such a low scandal, nevertheless he remained in the level of kedusha. Oh, and now I guess he's offering another possibility. How is it that Elisha allowed Gehazi to stick around? Ulai im yediyoso, despite his knowledge, choshav sheyachso lemutav. Nah, he was still within the tvach. How do you say? He was still within the range. He was still within the range of chazor b'tshuva. V'yel abrachim kishronosav shenir lehem tovim. Ah, why did Elisha hire Gehazi to begin with? Appoint him as his mesharis. Apparently, Gehazi was full of talents and potential. So if he would do tshuva, then all these talents would be lebracha, could be a great benefit for Klal Yisrael. Aval b'chol ofen kirvas rasha b'yofen shelo yizok v'yazik mu'uma l'shleimus kedushas kachemora al haflogas ma'aloso. But even if you accept the second interpretation, that Elisha was holding out that maybe Gehazi would do tshuva, either way, it seems quite clear that the level of kedusha that Elisha had achieved was such that his close association with this rasha would still not have any damaging impact on his soul. The only thing I don't understand, he says shlo yizok v'yazik. Do you have the word v'yazik? Oh yeah, it's a photocopy. You have to have it. What is the word v'yazik here? Just one second.
He will damage.
Shlo yizok, which I assume means that Elisha will not be damaged. But what's v'yazik? Yazik who? Me or Mal me? You know, I don't know.
Where is
he? No, the last line here in Kuf Mem Tes. Okay, you see each other. Avol Cholof, meaning no matter which interpretation we take.
Yovad Rasha beofen shelo yizok v'yazik meuma l'shlemut hakdusha.
So what's the yizok and yazik? Again, I don't want to make a big deal about it, but it just was. maybe Lo Yizok is referring to Elisha and Lo Yazik is referring to Gehazi. I don't know. But that's Yesh Yasha B'dochak. You know? I just don't understand the double language here. Lo Yizok V'Yazik. You know? Yizok is Hispael. Is Nifal, I think. And Yazik is Poel. I don't know why he needs both. Alright, anyway. Vayigash Gehazi lahod for Omar Biosi Brabchanina Malamit Shaochza Bahod Yofya. Mitoch Gnuso shall also Rosha La Madnu Shvacho Shaltzadik. Again, your concepts have of contrast that the lowest, when you understand and appreciate how low Gehazi is, how base he is. By contrast, you appreciate the greatness of the tzaddik, the otzem kedushas nafsha, and the power of the sanctity of his soul. Dveikus el yona biyunim elokim. He's, and that's what a navi is, right? A navi is totally dedicated to iyunim elokim, you know, to thoughts and contemplations of God, and dveikus in Hashem. May ein pnos afrega l'dover zulosam. He doesn't even have a second in which he's free to distract himself. He is singly focused on Elokus and Yunim Elokim. Add to such a point, Shaya Oso Rosha Batuah, that Gehazi was absolutely convinced Shebimamado Ubifanov Shal Elisha, even in the very presence. Under Elisha's nose, Nag Bepriestus Maguna Kazos, he himself, Gehazi, could act in such an immodest, lewd kind of way. Mitoch Hakarosa Nisyonit, he already had experience in the past, And he recognized that kama mit aseket nafsho haromema, how much Elisha's soul is completely dedicated. Rak bidvarim elyonim, he's not at all distracted by what goes on even in front of his nose. Ashlo yargish klal. Gehazi was completely convinced that Elisha would not even become aware, me'akir, from this repulsive, immoral behavior, nasa b'fonav, taking place in front of his eyes. Knows Gehazi thought he could get away with it. Me'yos eino v'libo, because if you look at Elisha, his ayin and his lev is totally elamus kolos adichbodosh is kashu mem nafsho adivo. He doesn't disconnect himself for even a split second from his connection. The connection between his nefesh, his soul, and the muskolos hanichbados, the intellectual abstract concepts of godliness. This is what you call like his bodidus or hitanyanut, you know, the iyun gadol. His everything about Elisha is dedicated to be connected dovek v'shchina without any disconnection whatsoever, not even for a second. Yeah, it does sound a little bit strange, you know, that a person could be so holy that he's not aware of what's going on. Maybe what Rav Kook means is that this was the attitude of Gehazi, that Gehazi thought his actions would go unnoticed.
And they did.
Yeah, it doesn't say anywhere that Elisha got rid of him or anything like that. Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
I can just tell you this. I saw this a few times in my life. With Rav Soloveitchik, I saw it on a fast day. Because very often on a fast day, he would give shiurim non-stop. For example, I think on Tainis Esther, if I remember correctly, he would give Lezecher, his wife. And he used to learn Prakim and Mishnayis, where the first letter of that perek would be another letter in his wife's name, and then he switched over to Rambam later on, years later, in which he would choose a perek in the Rambam where the first letter of the perek in the Rambam would correspond to her name, to one of the letters of her name, and he would go for hours and hours and hours without a break. I mean, sometimes he had to get up and go to the washroom, but that was it. And we were fasting, we were famished, and he keeps teaching and going and like totally unaware of the physicality. On Tisha B'Av, he would stay kinnis with us from about 8:30 in the morning until 5 in the afternoon. Non-stop. I remember Chatzos Yom, he would tell us to sit on chairs, but he would stay on the floor. And he was no youngster. You know, when I got to the Shia, the Rav was probably about 75, maybe even more. I came to the Shia in 1973. I came to 73 to 78. Those were my 5 years. And he was no youngster. Then I had another Rebbe in high school. His name was Rav Nissen Alpert. Great guy. He was a Talmud Muvaker of Moshe Feinstein. I was in Kitay Yud Aleph, youngster. We loved Rabbi Alpert. He had one chisaron in his life. He smoked cigars and he inhaled. And at the age of 65, he had lung cancer. Now, lung cancer, today maybe they would do a transfer, but this was way back when, and he was devastated. But he pushed himself until like just the last few weeks before he expired. He was when his body just completely gave way. But how he would push himself. And the Rav's brother, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, had a stroke. And after the stroke, his body was so disabled, when he would put on tefillin, he would scream from the pain. But he would put on tefillin. I mean, these people were like above, almost above the physical limitations of life. You know, the joke they say, I heard about Rav Soloveitchik, I also heard about Rav Parnas, that he walked into a pole and he said, excuse me. Because they're really on this level, you know, just like above.
But it still looks seems to be like a rebuke.
Do you think that Rav Kook is saying it in that light? Or he's not saying that. But you're saying it should be a rebuke.
It's like, it should be.
Because we should be totally aware of what's going on in front of our eyes. Yeah, I hear what you're saying.
If there's immoral behavior,
you should be aware of it.
Right. It means a person can't say, oh, this doesn't interest me. I'm not dealing with the big picture stuff.
And with parents and children, sometimes you find great scholars and tzaddikim, and yet their children are not on the right path. And that sometimes they're not even, they're oblivious to it. You know, it's like, she has to point that to her husband. Look what's going on around you. They say about Rav Yafin, Zichron Levrach, he was the Rosh Yeshiva of Beit Yosef in Borough Park, in the Beit Yosef Yeshiva. He was a great Baal Musa and a great Rosh Yeshiva, that he never knew where he parked his car on any individual day. He always had to take someone with him who would remember where he was parked. Otherwise, there's no way he could find his car. No, I mean, again, you could look at it in two ways, you know.
I think I 100% agree, but there are certain things that you can't be oblivious to.
Your responsibility, your moral and religious responsibility is to be aware of them, you know. Sometimes you could choose deliberately to overlook them, you know, but that's part of a process in which you hope, let's say, that a Talmud or a child will slowly rectify it on his own.
Everything is wrong with him. We are aware.
That could be deliberate sometimes, but at least to be aware of.
But Rav Kook doesn't seem to rebuke him on this.
Because
maybe he's going with the stream of the Gemara, which is saying, look at the two contrasts.
The contrast, the kadosh, but who? Who kadosh v'lo gechas? But he is offering an interesting answer to this technical question: how gechazi thought? What was he thinking that he could get away with this in the presence of his Rebbe? I mean, to do this kind of low act, you know. So he says that, and he points out mitok nisayon that, you know, Gehazi knew exactly where Elisha's brain was at, you know, and he could get away with it.
I've had an opportunity to meet Rav Kanievsky a number of times, and you see again he lives, but he's very much also down to earth. That means in details you can ask. Means that it seems as if he's sort of completely detached. I've probably met Rav Kanievsky.
Yeah, once or twice, not too many times.
He's a malach. I mean, he was the sandak of my son from Brit Milah. He sits there and studies all the time. I mean, before the Moel came, he was there sitting there with his small malach and just studying, learning, with Brit Milah. Go up into the car, off he goes. I mean, he's a malach, but on the other hand, you can ask him very practical questions.
Okay, so next part of the pasuk, let's read the whole pasuk again. It says, "Vatomer el isha, hinei no yadati ki ish elokim kadoshu over aleinu tamid." Omer Rab Yossi, Rab Chanina, Mishum Rab Eliezer, Ben Yaakov, Kol HaMareach, Talmud Chacham, B'toch Beso, U'mahaneu Minachosov, Malalov HaKosov, Ki'ilu, Makriv, Tmidim. So a person hosts a Talmud Chacham in his house constantly. It's as if he brings a Tomit. Now I'm wondering why, maybe Rav Kook will address this, why Dafka Karban Tomit? You know, there are many different Karbanos. I mean, I would take a stab at it. Maybe Karban Tamid is unique. All the other Karbanos have a certain toelis. You know, I bring a Karban and I want to be Mechaper, a Chatas, an Ola. You know, Chatas for a Chiv Kares, or an Ola if I violate an essay, if I don't fulfill. But in the case of a Tamid, it's just Klal Yisrael trying to come close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So maybe if a person brings food or hosts a Talmud Chacham, he's not interested in any payback. You know, he's not waiting for it's a chesed shel emes, but he feels it's an opportunity to get close to the Talmud Chacham. And really, getting close to the Talmud Chacham is like getting close to the Shechina, because the Gemara says in many places that v'dovka bo v'chiyev sheli dovik v'shechina. Shechina is an eish ochla. How can we do it? Ella mikan he dovik v'talmidi chachamim. and you should marry off your daughter to a Talmud Chacham, and you should be Meshavish a Talmud Chacham. So what greater Shemesh could there be than a person who hosts a Talmud Chacham? He's literally on top of the Talmud Chacham. I remember once my wife and I had the schus of hosting a Sheva Brachas for my friend Pinky Weinberger. Both Pinky and I had learned in Keren B'Yavne, so we invited the Rosh Shiva of Goldberg Zatzal, and sure enough he came. And I remember when he came into the room, it literally changed the whole atmosphere. You know, the Rosh Shiva's here, it's like you could feel it almost tangibly, you know, the electricity in the room. So that's what we're saying over here, to be ma'arech at Talmud Chacham. You know, it's really a way of getting close to the Shechina. Oh, so we're up to Kuf Nun Aleph. Yesh kama ofane dimui litmidim b'achzokas Talmid Chacham. There are many different, there are a number of different ways in which you can justify the analogy to a Talmid. When a person hosts a Talmud Chacham, or he benefits a Talmud Chacham. Hatmidim hayu avodas Hashem mishutefes leklal Yisrael. The Talmid is a carbon tzibur, and it connects together all of Klal Yisrael. Ba'a mitrumas alishka, and the money that was collected from Klal Yisrael, the shkolim, were put into the trumas alishka, from which they bought the animals for the tmidim, one in the morning, one in the evening. Vehine hamachzik talmid chacham who goreim shel leklal Yisrael ye'or. He benefits Klal Yisrael by giving them a light, a spiritual light. Al yidei or haTorah shel Talmidei Chachamim, shel Talmid Chacham haOsek b'Torah. So the Talmid Chacham is sitting and learning, and he's generating a light that has an impact on all of Klal Yisrael. V'yishua saKlal he bioso biUma limudei Hashem, and this will bring about a Yeshua for the Klal. Because the Klal, the nation of Israel, is Limudei Hashem. In Kein Hu Dome, by supporting this Talmud Chacham, by feeding him, etc., he's similar to Keilu Hu Aisa Efsharis Sheyakriv Tmidim Yishalo L'chaper Al Klal Yisrael Zakosam L'Avodas Hashem. Interesting, Arav Kook adds, Keilu Hais Efsharis, because really there is no possibility. You can never actually write the check for a Korban Talmud. Korban Talmud has to come for the Lishka Trumas HaLishka. But in theory, let's say you could personally underwrite a check for the Korban Talmid. That's exactly what this person is doing when he is ma'arech a Talmud Chacham, when he's mahana Talmud Chacham. Because just like writing a check to underwrite a Korban Talmid means to bring a kapara, a tremendous benefit for all of Klal Yisrael here too, by allowing the Talmud Chacham, facilitating his ability to focus on his learning and dedicate himself to his Torah, you are generating a benefit, a Torah for all of Klal Yisrael. Fascinating. The Ode, I assume this means Roman number two, you know, another way of explaining the comparison to a Korban Talmud. Yesh avodas Hashem haba mizman lizman. There are, you know, cases where or types of service which are spread out over which reflect certain specific periods of time, mizman lizman. But there's another category of avoda tmidis, which means continuous. It's constant. Misha oved Hashem kol yomav. It's not just on occasion. It's not an occasional service to Hashem, but it's a constant service to Hashem. It's like some people they remember others on their birthday, you know. So they all of a sudden they sit down and they write them a little ichulim, you know. They send them a thank you, a birthday card, or they give them a little, you know, a call, they sing them, send them an email. Or a husband remembers his wife on an anniversary, vice versa. Or you remember your parents in America, they have Mother's Day and Father's Day, you know. But for the rest of the year, I don't know, like, you don't really recognize and express gratitude to them. So comes the Korban Talmid and teaches us, no, Tmidus. That's why Shivasa B'Tamuz, you know, the five things that happen on Shivasa B'Tamuz, one of his Batlat Talmid, if you read the Slichos that we say, it's all about the fact that we lost the Talmid. Which really was the beginning of the end, because the Korban Talmid never was discontinued from the time of the building of the Mikdash until a few weeks before the Churban. And that was a tremendous loss, the Korban Tamid. So that's the Avodah Tmidis, which is that much greater than Avodah Abba Mizman Lizman, not just occasional. Valzeh Hoysa Malas Hatmidis, Hatmidim, excuse me, Shoysa Avodah Hashem Tmidis L'Klal Yisrael, so the special, unique status and the Madrega of the Korban Tamid is that it represents the Avodah Tmidis of Klal Yisrael, L'ha Iram, to arouse within them gamkein she royalish tadol al maila zosa shlemus shalavodas Hashem atmidis. So the Korban Tamid was geared or meant to awaken us to strengthen ourselves, to dedicate ourselves to a constant avodas Hashem, not just occasional. V'hinei amahane tamid chochem min chosim nimtza she gam isko b'yasoko v'shtadluso b'mischoro v'avodoso Gam kein avodas Hashem hi, ki mimena totzaot lechazik yidei amlei haTorah shem meiris ol bar Hashem. Kein avodat. Wow, impressive. A person goes to work, and let's say he works, I don't know, he works 12 hours a day. He's got a very long work day, and he's out there mischar. You know, he's flying to China to buy merchandise and sell it. He says every single moment of his avodah is an avodah. What do I mean? It's not just an avodah mibchinat mischa, but it's also avodas Hashem. Why? Because he's going to take from his money that he earns and allocate it for the benefit of amelin Torah, of those who are toiling and learning in Torah. So it comes out that all of his work and all of his finance and everything that he does in his business interactions, it's all part and parcel of an avodas Hashem. It's not like you could say, you know, let's say he works 100 hours. The first 90 hours he works for himself, and the last 10 hours he's going to give 10% for the... No, it saturates and encompasses all of his avodah. All the 100 hours that he puts in on a weekly basis are all avodas Hashem. Why? Because he's going to take from that and benefit the Talmud Chacham. In that sense, this person who benefits the Talmud Chacham is like a Korban Tamid. Because his avodah is avodah tmidis. He's constantly involved in avodas Hashem. He's not one of these occasional guys. He's like the Korban Tamid. Person could bring a korban. Let's say, for example, you could bring a korban nedava on one occasion or another occasion. Wait a week, a month, a year. Once a year I bring it. You know, that's an occasional avodas Hashem. But the Korban Tamid goes beyond that. And it represents our constant involvement in avodas Hashem. Everything we do. Which really means, and I think that's what Rav Kook is pointing out, that every dimension of our life, as mundane and secular as it might be, can be avodas Hashem, can be all incorporated into a life of avodas Hashem. Viod, wow, now he's on the Roman numeral number 3. This is very creative. He says, Al hatmid ki al hatmidim she avodas klal Yisrael amru chazal. More in Tainis. Now there's a mission in Tainis. Eich korban shalodim korev v'hu eino omen al gabov. Ah. In other words, when you bring a korban, you're the bailam of the korban, you have to go into the Azara, and you have to sort of be there and supervise the dalet avodas of the Kohen. But that's only possible in a korban yachid. In the case of a korban tzibur, where all of Klal Yisrael are the bailim over this korban, it's impossible, logistically, to call together all of Klal Yisrael and have each one be omid on the korban, on the tamid. And therefore they set up ma'amados, right? These groups of Kohanim, Levim, Yisraelim, who were sort of like the messengers of Klal Yisrael, and represented the Klal for a korban tzibur, and they were omdim al gabe akarban. And all the smichos le'inyan avoda v'yesek ha-shlemus poel harbi l'romas ha-nefesh l'maloso lechos b'chamudos v'chol midos tovos. One second, what's he saying over here? Oh, he's saying smichos b'makom. In other words, on the one hand, the Anshei Mamad were the long arm of the people of Israel. So I could be a farmer up in, you know, near Metula, and I don't have to come to be omer on the carbon, even though I'm a bialim on the carbon, no less than anyone else in Klal Yisrael, because the Anshei Mamed represent me. But those who are samuch, who are really close, not from Metula to Yerushalayim is hours and hours, no, if I'm close, then I have even more of an impact. You know, the holiness and the sanctity of the carbon has more of an impact the closer you are. Sasmichus b'mokum l'yinavod v'esek ha'shlims po'el harveh. You know, your physical proximity is a major factor. We're roaming in Sanefesh Lamaloso. To uplift the Nefesh to its great Milo. Lechos bechamudos v'chol mini tovos. V'chein ha'mahane talmud chocham. What does he mean, v'chein ha'mahane talmud chocham? I have to stand here. If a person benefits the Talmud Chacham, oh, I see what he's saying. In other words, the advantage of being Mahane Talmud Chacham is it's not long distance. Right? I serve the Talmud Chacham. I'm literally like Avraham Avinu, who omed aleihem, I'm standing over him. So that's certainly Smichus Makom. And Rav Kook's thesis is that the closer I am, the more of an impact it has on me. You know, there's one halacha that you could be up in the north, and the Anshei Mamed or your Shluchim to be Omid Ala Karban, and that works. But imagine someone who's within the confines of the Azara, it has even more of an impact on him. Say how much more saw Mahane Tamil Chacham Im Zehu Bikirvas Al Yadesha Ma'archu Bebeso. He's really right there when he invites the Tamil Chacham into his house. I don't know what the word Aval here is.
He's like the actual shliach tibur. He's like the anshei ma'amadot
themselves.
Right.
If I would take out the word avol here, I think it's a mistake. If you take out the word avol, he says im zeh, and how much more so? Hu b'kirvaso, he's even closer. He's not just like the people of Israel who appoint, you know, the long distance representatives of the Anshei Mamed, Shema Archo Bebeso, who Doma Lamakov Tmidim, maybe he means to the Anshei Mamed of the Bak, I don't know. Sheim Heyos Toelis Aklal Gambarichuk Makom, even though 99% of the population of Israel will enjoy the benefits of this carbon, even though they're far, far away, is nevertheless Mosefesh Shlemus Bekir of Makom, the closer you are, the greater the impact that it has on you. Mo'ilu l'nefesh to'el t'midis gamke ma'asmodas haru'uya hanichboda shel shleimus ha'ish ha'ma'ula b'chir Hashem. So how much more so will this have an impact when you become close to this perfection of an ish ha'ma'ula b'chir Hashem, like somebody like Elisha. So it means the following, that the Talmud Chacham himself is almost like a walking Mizbeach, a walking Beis HaMikdash. And when I bring the Talmud Chacham into my house, I am therefore transforming my house into a miniature or a replica of the Beis HaMikdash. And I'm doing it both in Tmidi, because I'm consistently doing this. It's like, it reminds me, they say in England, in London, there's a place... there's a fellow, he must be an outstanding tzaddik, his name is Levison, Jackie Levison, and anyone who comes to London, you know, Meshulachim, to Rosh Yeshivas, Rosh Kol, they all come to London for fundraising probably, so they know that, you know, that's where they can stay. You know, he has a beautiful guest area, and they say a joke, I don't know if it's a joke or it's a true story, that one of the Mishulachim said to Jackie, he said, Jackie, how long can I stay? So he says to him, well, nobody threw me out yet. So that's someone who's ma'arech et Talmud Chacham ba'ofen tmidi, you know, that he really dedicates himself. There are tzaddikim who are known for this, that they, you know, they constantly have scholars over in their homes, and that's a carbon tamid. Why is it carbon tamid? Because it's a carbon tamid with the extra dimension of kiruv makom, not like the benefit of Klal Yisrael through the carbon tamid, as they are insofar as they are represented by the Anshei Mamed berichuk makom. But this ma'areach tamid chacham, he gets the carbon tamid with the added additional dimension of kiruv makom. That's what I think he's saying. I don't know. I can't promise. But... So we only have a few minutes left. If we can fast forward here for a moment to Kuf Nun He, is a short one. So we'll be able to chaperine one more piece here. If a person eats and he drinks before tefillah in the morning, is all of Hakosuv Omer. The Torah says about him, a pasuk in Melachim, it says, "Vi oso osi yishlachto achrei goyecha." Al tikri goyecha, the Gemara says, on the second line from the top, Ela geyecha. Geyecha means it's gava, right? Omer Hakadosh Baruch Hu le'achash in his gozeh, kibul all of malchus shamayim. Now, offhand, what does the eating and the drinking before davening have to do with gaiva, with haughtiness? Says Rav Kook, this is Kuf Nun Hay on page 62. Yesod ha-gaiva hu she-yosur ha-odom levavo miladas she-ein tuvo biyodo ki-im kol she-musef sharas ha-kol miyad Hashem lo. A person should be constantly aware in his heart that any goodness that he has, any perfection that he's achieved, has become possible by Hashem, or is a result of what he received. Miyad Hashem lo, was given from Yad Hashem. The opposite of that, when he disconnects himself from that awareness, is gaiva. Al kelo yizgah b'mesh einu shalo. A person who's totally aware of the fact that everything that he has is from Hashem is not going to boast and say, well, look, kochi v'otzim yadi, I created it. Lo yizgah b'mesh einu shalo. It's not really his, it comes from Yad Hashem. Hargashah chushit lo tuchal litzayer zot. If a person is focused on his senses, you know, you want to talk about sense perception, which is the philosophy, you know, that's in philosophy, it's called empirical science, is lo tuchal litzayer. There's no way that empirical science can begin to comprehend the concept that all good comes miyad Hashem. Ki lo yargish hachush chutz hamargish miuma. If he's totally focused on his chushim, his sensuous pleasures, that's all he'll be aware of. He has no awareness of the Yad Hashem. Al kein hanimshach achra chushim yikshar begaiva. He'll be very close to being haughty, lemar, to declare she yodo hoshielo, right? Because he doesn't have any awareness that it's all coming from Yad Hashem. Because he's involved in his chushim, and the chushim have no way of understanding and recognizing that it's miyad Hashem. The chushim is all physical, it's all based on me, myself, and I. It's very, you know, I am the epicenter of the world. And that's what the focus on chushim is. Whereas the opposite, when does a person achieve hanava and humility? That's when he realizes that everything that he has comes from Yad Hashem. But someone who's completely involved in hargasha, in chushim, he is unaware, he's not capable of being aware of the Yad Hashem. So instead he says, it's my Yad. I was the one who brought it about. And he becomes Baal Gaiva. V'tachlis ha-tefillah hi, and what's the ultimate purpose of tefillah, says Rav Kook, la-shrish b'lev, la-das, she-kol tovenu miyad Hashem Yisbarach Hu lanu. That it should be implanted in our hearts, the awareness of the fact that nothing that we have, anything good that we have, comes from Yad Hashem. That's all he can acknowledge. He cannot acknowledge that he himself is the source of all this tova, but rather kol tuvenu miyad Hashem yisprach. That's what tefillah is going to teach him. When I stand and I daven three times a day, what am I saying? I'm saying, Hashem, it's all coming from you. That's antithetical to gaiva. If, on the other hand, I'm willing to enjoy these benefits of the chushim, the sensuous benefits of eating and drinking before I daven, then basically what I'm saying is that I am the epicenter. I'm the one who's responsible for all these pleasures. Al kein roi shetia hamshacha shel midas hanova kodem ha'achila shei behechrech mamsheches midas ha'gaiva be'orona.
Be'evrona, I think.
Be'evrona.
The person is blind to his midas ha'gaiva.
Right, he becomes iver, he becomes blind.
Everything is good is me, and everything is bad is not me.
Right. And if he attributes all the good to himself, then he becomes a Baal Gaiva. He completely excludes the Yad Hashem. So when he gets involved in physical pleasures before tefillah, and he eats his banquet, what he's basically saying is that I'm not interested in tefillah. I'm not interested in Yad Hashem. Tefillah means Yad Hashem. Tefillah, the underlying premise of tefillah is that everything comes from Hashem. Otherwise, why am I standing like a dumbbell? Mechanically mumbling all these words in front of what? Hello, what? The answer is that Baruch Lanas Hashanah Zos, that all Paradosa comes from Yad Hashem, and Al Tzadikim. Every bracha that we recite, every tefillah, every petition is based on the assumption, the premise, that it's all coming from Yad Hashem. A person who gets enjoyed, focused on his physicality, he can't think beyond that. He doesn't recognize the Yad Hashem. He's totally atheistic. You know, there's no Yad Hashem. It's all mine, and that's what Gaiva is all about here. So the Rav Kook's presentation, I think, would further drive home how significant, how severe of a problem it is to eat before davening. On a level of a halachist, you know, you could simply say, you know, you're not allowed to eat before davening. That should be the first thing you do. He's really peeling off layers and layers and revealing deeper meanings here. You know why you can't eat before davening? That's because the concept of indulging in pleasures and then davening, and davening means to become close to Hashem, to recognize and admit and confess that everything comes from Hashem. This is antithetical. You can't on the one hand say that you're going to eat and eat and eat, and on the other hand say you're going to daven later on. You can't do that. Because if you're eating and eating, you're eating, you're totally orangutan focused on your physical pleasures, and there's no room to thank anybody but yourself. And you build up yourself as being the greatest. That's the Malkai. Okay, I think we'll stop here. Zrat Hashem. We'll see if we want to move on or fill in the thing. But that'll be on Thursday if you yeah. Okay, if you can.
I try to plan my week.
Okay, great. I'm happy because